Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, I, Jedi, by Michael A. Stackpole. I threaded my way over the catwalks that led to my home. The door flew open, and a wave of warm air cascaded down over me. Mirax had shut off the apartment's environmental comfort unit. We both did that when we were going to be gone for an extended period of time. In the living room off to the left, I saw a light blinking on the hollow table. I hit the button. Even in miniature, Mirax's black hair shone lustrously, and fire filled her brown eyes.
Corin, I'd hoped to be here when you got back, but I've got a run I can't turn down. You should only be lonely for about a day. If my plans change, I'll let you know. I love you. Don't forget it, and don't doubt it, ever. I'll be back soon, love.
Her image dissolved into static. She said I'd be lonely for only a day or so. The fact was, however, that I had been a full day late. So she should have been here. A shiver ran down my spine, but I shrugged it off. Feeling a little achy and tired from my most recent Rogue Squadron mission, I fell into a dreamless sleep.
Corin?
I stirred at the sound of my name.
Corin!
Mirax's shriek ripped me to wakefulness. The image of her face faded from before my eyes as my hands encountered only cold sheets where she should have been. In one blindingly terrible moment, I knew Mirax was gone. I ran to the living room and keyed in a call. The head and shoulders of a black droid materialized.
You have reached Rogue Squadron headquarters.
Horn here. Is the Colonel available, Emtre? The droid's eyes flickered.
The Colonel has a meeting scheduled 30 standard minutes from now.
I have to talk to him. Mirax is gone. I mean, really gone. And I have to find her. I'll be there soon. I snapped to attention and gave Tycho Selkiew as crisp a salute as I could manage. Thank you for seeing me, sir. Standing at his desk, Tycho returned my salute sharply, but sympathy softened his blue eyes.
Emtre told me about your problem, though he didn't give me much detail.
I didn't have much to give him. I'm sorry.
Tycho pointed me to a chair in front of his desk. Not your fault, I think.
He glanced back at the doorway.
That's why I asked General Kraken to join us.
I turned and saw Aaron Kraken enter the office.
I wanted to discuss with Colonel Selkiew the intelligence we obtained from our last action against the Invid pirates.
I frowned. I'd really rather talk about my wife.
I know, but this is germane, Captain Horn.
General Kraken plugged a cable from his datapad into the holoprojector on the corner of Tycho's desk. An image of an Imperial Star Destroyer hovered there.
This is the Invidious. Approximately 6 years ago, Leonia Tavira appears to have obtained it.
Kraken hit a key, and the image shifted to that of a very young woman in an Imperial naval uniform with the rank insignia of an admiral.
Tavira has forged a loose coalition of freebooters and marauders into a fleet that looks to her for planning and coordination. She provides them with times and places for rendezvous, then plots courses, downloads battle plans, and uses the Invidious's firepower to suppress planetary defenses. Her allies loot and pillage to their heart's content, transferring half of what they take to her. She then vanishes, and they return to their bolt holes, waiting for her next call. None of the Invid pirates know where she hides her ship or when she will show up. Somehow, Tavira seems to know when we have prepared for one of her raids and calls it off. We've been able to figure out no pattern of behavior that would tip her off, so we have had to rely on more and more unorthodox methods for trying to locate her. He turned to face me, and ice crystallized in my gut. Part of those efforts involve Mirax. Mirax came to me to ask what she could do to help bring an end to the Invid raids. She said that the sooner the Invids were broken up, the less she would worry about their possibly killing you and your fellow rogues, and then she and you could get back to your lives. I fought to stop the tears, threatening to leak from my eyes.
Tell me where she was last.
I can't and won't, Captain Horn. Kraken's face closed. Think about it for a minute. I have agents in place who are very vulnerable.
It's Mirax's vulnerability I'm worrying about here.
I found my hands had become fists.
You may not want to give me the information, General, but you can be ordered to do so.
Only by the New Republic's ruling council.
I gave him as hard a stare as I could muster. I'm willing to petition them to get me that information.
I stood and offered both men a salute.
I do not mean to be insubordinate. But my wife is in trouble, and I will help her. Don't try to stop me. I knew my petition to the New Republic Ruling Council could easily be dismissed in the name of security, but if a couple of council members backed me, I might win the day. To enlist that sort of support, however, I needed to ask friends for favors. My first stop in that quest was the office of General Wedge Antilles. Wedge gave me a big smile that pulsed some warmth back into me.
Corin, what brings you here? Just visiting?
I swallowed hard.
Not exactly. I need a favor, a big favor.
Mirax is missing, and I need to find her. General Kraken knows where she was last reported to be. She was doing a job for him at the time, and he won't tell me where that was. Wedge's eyes brightened.
If you think about your request the way you would have thought about it when you were with Corsec, there's no way you'd have turned that sort of information over to the spouse of an undercover agent. Kraken doesn't want you running off and jeopardizing Mirax's life and his operation. But we might have an edge in helping you solve your problem.
What do you mean?
Luke's here, on Coruscant. You should talk to him.
Wedge nodded solemnly. Having a Jedi help you is not a bad way to go at all. Wedge made a call to Luke Skywalker, and we were invited to his chambers in the Imperial Palace. Luke smiled as he ushered us into his sparse apartments.
Wedge, good to see you again.
And you as well, Captain Horn. Your agitation is easy to sense. Why don't you explain what the problem is? I took a seat.
My wife, Mirax, is missing. She was trying to discover the location of the Invidious so we could put an end to Leonia Tavira's raids. I was sleeping, waiting for her to come back home, when I heard her call my name. Then I heard her scream it. Then there was nothing.
I locked gazes with the Jedi Master.
I could feel she was gone. Not dead, just cut off from me. Will you help me find her?
Luke laid a hand on my arm.
I would like to very much, but there is a problem.
What's that?
Luke sighed.
I don't have your connection to Mirax.
The abruptness with which your link to her was broken makes me wonder if she's in stasis.
My heart sank. So she's lost.
I didn't say that. Luke stared into my eyes. I think you can find her. I think you are strong enough in the Force to pick her out, even if she is in hibernation. Her thoughts may have been slowed to the point where they barely register. But through the Force, you can find them. They will lead you to her.
But I need to find her now.
No, Luke shook his head. You need to find her. What you need to do now is learn how to find her.
Luke stood. Down through the thousand generations that the Jedi maintained peace in the galaxy, there were lots of Jedi, hundreds, certainly, thousands, probably. The Emperor's best efforts to destroy us were not wholly successful, and there are Force-sensitive people still out there, just like you, Corin, and me. We need to create more Jedi to share the burden. In a couple of days, I plan to ask the Senate to let me establish a Jedi Academy.
Just a basic search through databases has turned up a number of viable candidates. If I can get a dozen, I think I will have enough to start. I'd like you to be one of them. How can I think of training to be a Jedi when my wife is gone? The training will make you that much more able to save her.
I hear what you're saying, Master Skywalker.
But there are other problems, I shrugged. I'm not unknown in the New Republic. If Mirax is kidnappers here, I'm being trained as a Jedi. Her life would be forfeit.
Very true, but that's not too difficult a problem to handle.
Luke smiled easily. Dye your hair, grow a beard. You'll look different. In your time with Korsak, you performed undercover operations. In researching the Corellian Jedi, I saw a name. Probably an ancestor of yours. He was Kieran Halcyon. You can use his name.
Kieran Halcyon. The name rolled soothingly around in my brain. That might work. I have to think about it.
Luke patted me on the shoulder. Think about reclaiming the heritage the Empire tried to deny to you. Wedge ran me home, and a familiar hooting sounded from the living room.
Yes, Whistler, it's me.
The little green R2 unit rolled over. I've just come from talking with Wedge and Luke Skywalker. They both think my learning to train as a Jedi is the key to finding Mirax. But I think that will take too long. I have so many questions that need answering. I'm lost. Whistler's data probe came out and sank itself into the data port on the holopad. In an instant, the image of my father appeared frozen on the holopad. It faded, replaced by the glowing words, "All you have to do is ask." Back before we had liberated Thyfera, Whistler had informed me that my father had loaded into him a holograph talking about my heritage. Whistler had said the message was recorded back before I joined Korsak. He'd been instructed to play it for me whenever I asked and could provide the encryption key. I had resisted listening to the message. My father had died in my arms on a Korsak mission, and I had been powerless to prevent his death. By putting off listening to the message, I had been trying to make my father's final gift last longer. But even as that thought bubbled in my brain, I realized that listening to the message would not destroy my father's gift. I smiled. He recorded that message long before he died as a failsafe. If something happened to him, I would not be left without information he thought I needed to know. I nodded to Whistler.
Please, play the message for me.
Decryption code is Neja Halcyon. My father's image reappeared and my throat tightened. His voice came through clear and strong.
I am making this recording for you, Corin, because there are things you should know. Being in Korsak can be dangerous, and I don't want anything to happen to me that would prevent you from learning about our family.
The message continued with my father smiling broadly.
This will sound like a wild tale, but it's all true. Your grandfather, Rostik Horn, is really your step-grandfather. Rostik's Korsak partner before the Clone Wars was a Jedi who died serving away from Corellia right after the Clone Wars. That Jedi, Neja Halcyon, was my father. And he served as my master before he went away. Neja went on that fateful mission with a Kamasi named Ilenik Itkla. Ilenik was kind enough to bring all of Neja's personal belongings back to Corellia after Neja's death, including his lightsaber. I was all of 10 years old when he died, and Rostik Horn saw to it that my mother and I wanted for nothing. My mother and Rostik fell in love and married, and Rostik adopted me. More importantly, when the Empire began to hunt down Jedi and their families, he managed to destroy records and fabricate new ones that insulated us from the Empire's wrath. I know this was quite a secret to keep from you, but the deception was necessary. Lord Vader and the others hunting Jedi have been relentless. Keeping you ignorant is keeping you safe. And so, here, with this message, I give you a choice. The fact that you say you want to join Korsak has filled me and your grandfather with more pride than you can imagine. I do want you to know, though, that my choice bridges two paths. I have used what I learned from my Jedi father to work within Korsak. In this way, I serve both the Halcyon and Horn traditions.
My father's image opened his hands.
If you have the chance, if you feel the need, I hope you will also make yourself open to both traditions. I know that whatever you will decide, it will be the right thing. I will know great joy if you bring the Halcyons back into the Jedi Order. But even that will be nothing compared to the joy I know in having you as my son and knowing you are happy and well.
He wants me to train. He knows it is the right thing for me to do. I thought for a moment. And I guess I know it too. I slowly stood. To do anything less means I fail in my responsibilities to Mirax. I'm not going to let that happen. I slid back a false panel in my nightstand and withdrew the slender silver cylinder that had been Nejith Halcyon's lightsaber. My right thumb punched the black button on it, allowing the silver-white blade to hiss to life. Luke Skywalker is looking for students. And I need a teacher. I smiled as Whistler trumpeted triumphantly. Kieran Halcyon is born. With my squadron mate Uro in the seat beside me, I angled the ship into the atmosphere of Yavin 4's jungle moon. Luke Skywalker appeared between us and pointed dead ahead. Bring us down on this side. The jungle's thick foliage looked like mottled carpeting with the occasional giant tree spiking upward. Further on, the Great Temple, a squared-off pyramidal stone structure, loomed like an alien creature amid the greenery. I'd seen images of that structure for years, first in Imperial News Hollows, and later in every history of the victorious rebellion ever made. It had looked impressive in the holograms, but certainly not this majestic. In the clearing on the east side of the temple, a landing zone had been laid out, and back away from it had gathered the 24 New Republic engineers who had been preparing the Great Temple for its new role as the home of the Jedi Academy. Uro would take them home, leaving Master Skywalker, two other recruits, and me behind. 9 more recruits would be following us, making the first class at the Academy an even dozen. Within a week, the rest of the Jedi candidates had arrived, filling the Great Temple with the life and color and laughter I guessed it had not known since the celebration following the Death Star's destruction. Master Skywalker took all of us through a series of exercises he said he'd learned from his teachers, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda. The exercises were typically little things that seemed on the surface to be child's play. Trying some of them seemed silly. But Tian, a slender silver-haired scholar and singer, and Kirana Ti, a green-eyed witch from Dathomir, and even the hermit gas prospector from Bespin, Streen, all approached these things with an open wonder and humor that made being silly a lot easier for me. Master Skywalker stood before us, having arranged us in a semicircle on the grassy clearing near the Great Temple. This is an exercise in 2 parts. The key here is learning to control perceptions. First, you need to make certain that the data coming in is correct, filtering out distractions or sharpening a sense to gather more information will let you do that. The second thing we will deal with is determining truth or falsehood of what you perceive. I scratched at the back of my neck. Truth and falsehood seem pretty straightforward to me. Many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view. Luke smiled indulgently at me. You would like an example to show this? I nodded. Luke's blue eyes narrowed until they became chips of ice in shadowed wells. You all know of Darth Vader as the most vile creature that ever lived. But I tell you this, he was good. There was inside Darth Vader the core of the man he had once been. In Vader's final moments, he rejected his master, the Emperor, and killed him. Another apprentice raised his head. I thought you killed the Emperor. Luke shook his head. I was just the instrument of change that allowed Darth Vader to redeem himself. I leaned forward. You must have made a powerful appeal to him. I did. Love is a powerful tool to employ against the dark side. Luke hesitated for a moment. And the love of a son for his father is what saved Darth Vader. My flesh puckered and I suppressed a shudder when the realization that Luke Skywalker was Darth Vader's son finally exploded in my brain. Luke looked down at the ground, almost penitent. I have told you this to provide Kieran his example, and to lower a barrier between us. You have the last of my secrets now. I trust you with it, and look forward to when you will trust me with whatever secrets trouble you. His head came up and his face brightened, shattering the dull mood that had settled over us. Brooding over this will waste the day, so I want to return to the exercise. You will choose a partner, and each of you will bear a forearm. You will close your eyes and use what you have been taught to block feeling to that forearm. Then each of you will take a small stone and grasp it between the thumb and forefinger of the non-numbed arm. Using your remaining senses, you are to bring that stone as close as possible to touching the other person's flesh as you can. The goal is to come as close as possible to touching without actually doing so, and to react only when a touch is sensed but not felt. Once you sense the touch of the stone through the Force, tap your partner's arm. I partnered up with Tian and knelt knee to knee with her. We both drew our sleeves back from our left forearms and presented them. Then I tried to sense Tian's presence. I realized I was really trying to spread myself too thin. First of all, I needed to be able to sense Tian's arms, not her whole body and presence. Narrowing the task before me made it far more manageable. I shifted my thinking around to a new paradigm, in which I saw the hairs on my arm exuding little force tendrils that wove themselves into a glowing mesh. As her pebble approached my skin, I watched it penetrating layers of my screen. As her stone touched the last layer, I tapped her elbow. Then I shifted my concentration to my right hand. I projected similar tendrils from my fingers, forming them into a capsule that surrounded my stone. As the stone got closer and closer to her flesh, the color shifted, and I halted my movement without touching her. The sound of Luke's voice brought me out of my introspection. I want you to place your pebble in the palm of your partner's hand. I want you then to reach out and use the force to make it move. If you can lift it clear of your partner's palm, so much the better. I drew in a deep breath and let it out slowly. I bent my will to shifting the stone. Nothing. It did not help at all that Tian's stone danced in my palm as if a groundquake was shaking the planet. Her sharp giggle, half shriek, half laugh, let me know that she'd sensed the rock's movement. I tried again to push and make my rock move, but got nothing. I opened my eyes and looked up at Master Skywalker. I'm not even moving the dust on this rock. Luke smiled. The pace may be different, but the progression is the same for all of you. Setbacks are expected. Success and failure will always be part of your training. Over the next several days, we rotated through a series of exercises that underscored my inability to feel the Force. Whereas Luke used the aphorism, size matters not, to encourage others to forget their doubts, with me it became praise for even the least little twitch of a rock. Something had to give, and I thought I saw a way to make it happen. Luke had arranged us in a circle around a huge boulder buried halfway into the ground. He nodded toward it. This rock, for all we know, is really just the top of a long plinth. Moving it may take a titanic and sustained effort. If the force is not flowing, the task will not be completed. He looked at each of us. Who would be first to try? Master, if you please. I bowed my head toward him. I would be the first. Luke looked at me. Do you think you are ready? I shrugged. Perhaps in focusing on small things, I have closed myself down to the force. To feel it, I must open myself to something more grand. I must move this rock. Therefore, I will move it. The Jedi Master nodded. It is yours to do, then. Closing my eyes, I drew in a deep breath. Exhaling it slowly, I let my senses expand and touch Tian and Streen on either side of me. Then my consciousness leaped link by link until I knew where everyone was in the circle.
From there, I began to work inward, and as I did so, I began to feel the first faint tingles of energy. By slowly modifying a thought here, calming a doubt there, setting aside fear and encouraging hope, I changed how the force flowed within me. I let it erode from the inside out, all the walls isolating me from the universal torrent of force energy. With the first breach in my defenses, the force slammed into me. It filled me up in an instant, and I imagined it leaking from my eyes, nose, and mouth. I wanted to shout and dance with joy. It was what I felt when Mirax first said she loved me. It was the scent of the perfume my mother wore, and the warm laugh my father used to have when he was proud of me. It was everything that was good and right and positive and alive, and it was waiting for me to bend it to my will. Newly empowered, I reached out for the stone. I grit my teeth against the effort. Before my mind's eye, I saw it quiver and shake. Slowly, slowly at first, it began to move upward. The stone came fully clear of the ground, but that was not enough for me. I could feel the force pulsing into me, full and insistent. I lifted the rock up so high that I knew I would be able to see beneath it and find Master Skywalker across the circle from me. I smiled and opened my eyes. The rock remained in the ground. I stared at it and tried to remember if I'd heard it crash back down. I couldn't remember such a sound, nor could I remember feeling the shockwave that would have resulted. I couldn't believe it had not moved, because I knew I had felt the force, and I knew the rock had flown. Then I noticed that all the others, every single one of them, were looking at the spot in the air where I had seen the rock floating. Across from me, Luke looked around at the other students, then gently passed a hand through the air, causing them to blink and rub their eyes. What Kieran did or did not do here should not concern you. Instead, be happy knowing yet another of you is past the first hurdle on the road to becoming a Jedi Knight. The next morning, I found Master Skywalker waiting for me in my chamber after I finished my daily run. Hovering above his outstretched palm, I saw a milky jade crystal block. You remember what this is? A Jedi holocron. It contains histories and wisdom and information about the Jedi collected through the years. Exactly right. Luke cupped his hands and touched the floating cube with his fingertips. The crystal flared white for a moment. Then the hologram of a hunched insectoid creature with a bulbous carapace congealed above it like a green ghost. The creature oriented itself toward Luke.
"Greetings, Jedi,"
it intoned.
"I am Podobas, the gatekeeper of the holocron. Do you have a question for me?"
Luke looked through the hologram at me. "Gatekeeper, explain the power classified as Alter Mind to Kieran Halcyon." The gatekeeper fixed me with a stare.
"Through the power known as Alter Mind, a Jedi can project her perception of reality into the mind of another, or project an illusion or conclusion that she needs the other to hold as true. The dark side lurks nearby in this power, so it should be used with caution."
Luke released the holocron and the gatekeeper evaporated. I was concerned about how easily you managed to make us all see what you wanted us to see, which is why I consulted the holocron about your ability. I think you should be very careful about how you employ it.
Got it.
I smile. The boxy transport touched down, and a bright-eyed young man descended from the ship's interior, winning a smile from Luke.
"Welcome, Kip Duran."
The wiry youth returned Luke's smile.
"I'm ready, Master Skywalker. Teach me the Jedi ways."
Kip proved almost immediately to be the greatest of the apprentices gathered at the academy. Master Luke found Kip's abilities all but mesmerizing, and devoted much time to directing his studies. I suspected that Luke saw a lot of himself in Kip. They both came from brutal worlds, Tatooine and Kessel, respectively.
Kip had received initial instruction from the fallen Jedi female Vima Daboda, much as Obi-Wan had taught Luke. Kip had also proved adept at piloting a ship and had saved Han Solo's life. A positive endorsement, to be sure. Kip's growth in the Force was nothing shy of incredible. In just over a week, he surpassed anything the rest of us were doing by light years. Kip gave us hope that re-establishing the Jedi Order could be and would be done. Part of our training at the Academy was devoted to researching our Jedi past. The holocron was very helpful in that area and gave us some planetary history to work from. Yavin 4, it turned out, had been the seat of power of a formidable Dark Lord of the Sith, a fallen Jedi known as Exar Kun. Only when the Jedi of the Old Republic came after him in what became known as the Sith War, was he defeated and his evil expunged from the galaxy for all time. He'd been dead now for 4,000 years. After a particularly grueling day listening to one of the auxiliary holocron gatekeepers spin stories of the Old Republic, the Academy personnel had all gathered in one of the larger seminar rooms to listen to Tian's latest ballad. The ballad of Nomi Sunrider came from the era of Exar Kun. Sunrider was a woman whose husband had been slain, so she took his place in a Jedi training cadre. She went on to play a key role in the Sith War. Halfway through the song, Kip stood, his face contorted with disgust. "I wish you wouldn't perpetuate that ridiculous story. Nomi Sunrider was a victim. She listened blindly to her Jedi masters, who were afraid because Exar Kun had discovered a way for the Jedi to expand their power." Luke asked Kip where he'd learned what he'd just said, and Kip mumbled something about having used the holocron. But Luke's question had already answered itself in my gut. Exar Kun himself must somehow have been Kip's teacher. I'd been with Tian as we listened to Bodo Bas talk about the Sith War. Kip's take on it was decidedly pro-Exar Kun. And as nearly as we had been able to discover, there were no minority opinions on the subject available from the holocron. I came out of my reverie as Kip's blazing gaze brushed past my own. "They wouldn't all have been slaughtered. The Jedi would never have fallen, and we wouldn't be here, taught by someone who doesn't know any more than we do." Before I could reply, I sensed a powerful Force presence descending toward the moon. By the time we left the Great Temple, a Z-95 headhunter was setting down on the landing grid. The pilot emerged, wearing a silvery form-fitting flight suit. Luke smiled as he turned and presented her to us. "This is Mara Jade. She has come here to learn the ways of the Jedi." The uneasiness I felt over Kip suddenly became compounded. Mara Jade had been groomed by the Emperor to be an agent who was adept in use of the Force. Her very existence had been unknown to all but a handful of Imperials, and she would have remained hidden save for her role in defeating Grand Admiral Thrawn. Details on that were very sketchy, but I'd been left with the impression that she was very competent, very lethal, and not that positively disposed to Jedi. Luke turned to me and said, "Kieran, will you please see to Mara's billeting? I have something to which I must attend, if you don't mind, Mara." She gave him a quick nod, then regarded me. "Have we met before?" "No, I don't think so." "Odd. I usually don't forget a face." I waved her toward the Great Temple. "Master Skywalker's chambers are on the third level, likewise some of the students." I felt tendrils of the Force snake out from her and probe the fringes of my mind. "But that's not where you live." I concentrated for a nanosecond and shut her out of my mind. "No, I was attracted to the old pilot billets on the ground floor." "Then I'll look there first for a place to stay, if you don't mind." "Mine is not to mind, but to obey the wishes of the Master." She clapped her hands mockingly. "Oh, very good, spoken like an obsequious Imperial courtier." I gave her a quick smile as we entered the Great Temple. "Glad to make you feel at home." The remark brought her head up. "The Empire's dead." "But not all loyalties to it." She stopped in the middle of the hangar floor.
"Shall we settle this now?"
I drew in a deep breath, held it, then slowly exhaled. Please forgive my being rude. I extended my hand to her. I am Corin Horn. My true name almost caught in my throat, but Luke clearly trusted her, and my gut told me I should do the same. Mara Jade shook my hand and looked me over again. I knew you were familiar. I've heard of you. That evening, I got tagged with kitchen duty. I'd just finished serving when Kip stormed out of the dining room and clipped me with a shoulder. Hey, Kip, what's the problem? The younger man said nothing and continued to stalk down the corridor. I ran after him and dropped my hand on his shoulder. Kip, answer me. Kip whirled, his dark eyes blazing. The forced blow he aimed at me glanced off the side of my chest, yet it was strong enough to bounce me off the corridor wall. I caught myself against the rough stones, but not before I'd slid halfway to the floor.
You are not my master.
Kip pointed back toward the dining room.
He is not my master. What good is it being a Jedi if we do not act?
What good is it if we are Jedi that don't act responsibly? I hauled myself upright. Remember, Kip, the no-good Jedi kicked Exar Kun's butt. Kip struck at me again through the Force, but I expected it this time. I absorbed enough of it to let me create a shield. You're involved with someone who lost a long time ago. Don't compound his error.
And who will stop me?
I hesitated because Kip's words seemed to echo within themselves. We were not alone, which meant Kip's mentor had come to aid his apprentice. I will, if you make it necessary. An ancient sneer of contempt twisted Kip's features.
Puny Jedi, you are of no concern to me.
Even though I braced myself for another attack, it did no good. Kip's previous force blows were like light breezes compared to this full-out gale. I slammed back into the wall with teeth-rattling impact. As my body absorbed force energy and fed it back out, the shield I'd created grew in size. Even so, Kip's attack jammed the shield back against the wall, and I watched stone crumble beneath its rim. The safe area I had began to shrink, and my chest became tight as it compressed my ribs. Then the world around me went black. I awakened probably less than a minute after that, judging by how much of the dinner had been consumed in my absence. I hung in the doorway to the dining room, my ribs a bit sore. Luke's blue eyes became slits.
What happened to you?
Kip didn't like the menu. I winced as a twinge ran through my ribs. We had a discussion in the hallway.
You didn't feel anything?
Heads all around the table shook, and I felt cold dread begin to congeal in my stomach. If Exar Kun could mask the attack on me in such a way that Master Skywalker could not feel it barely 15 meters away, then we were up against something more powerful than I'd ever cared to imagine existing.
Master Skywalker,
I would have a word with you, alone. In the kitchen, Luke turned on me.
You did something to provoke an attack, didn't you?
I rubbed a hand along my jaw. It's an old interrogation technique. I drew a conclusion from what I saw earlier this evening and tried it out. I told him Exar Kun had gotten his butt kicked by the Jedi, and that Kun was wrong. I got a reaction, a very strong one.
Kip is strong in the Force. Luke folded his arms over his chest. He has a certain sympathy for Exar Kun. The reaction was not to be unexpected.
I could buy into that, but I felt another presence, and it helped Kip's next attack pack a wallop.
Luke shook his head. You're making a mistake jumping to the conclusion that we're dealing with Exar Kun.
I rested my hands on Luke's shoulders.
Kip is out of control. You have to talk to him and straighten him out.
Luke held my gaze.
Kip is in a state of turmoil.
I think he would see intervention right now as a confrontation, don't you? I hesitated.
So, you think we should let him sort his head out himself? Just don't provoke him.
I shook my head.
I'm sorry for interfering, Master Skywalker. I'll gladly leave him alone. With his ally, he's out of my weight class anyway.
After cleaning up dinner, I retreated to my room, but my meditations were soon penetrated by the shrill bleating of an R2 unit. I grabbed my lightsaber and ran out of the Great Temple, trailing two silhouettes that had to be Master Skywalker and Mara Jade. As I came out into the cool night air, I saw the Z-95 headhunter streaking away into the starry sky.
Kip stole my ship!
Anger poured off Mara Jade in waves.
We've got to go after him!
I cleared my throat. We don't have any ships here. Mara's jaw dropped.
You two without X-Wings?
This is a school for Jedi, not pilots. Luke's face closed up as the other apprentices began to filter out of the Great Temple. I've got to deal with my apprentices and explain this to them. I watched Luke go, but felt no inclination to follow. Being there and questioning his thinking would have been disruptive, so I remained behind. She glared at me.
You can go too.
I shook my head. Kind of a chilly night, basking in the heat of your anger seems like a good choice.
And if I don't want you here?
Easy now, Mara. Your ship was stolen, that's all. I kept a light tone in my voice. It's not like the sun went supernova.
It might as well have.
I frowned. Am I missing something? She was quiet, thoughtful for a few moments. Then she spoke.
Everything must have come very easy for you. Your family was part of Corsac, so your life was all mapped out for you.
You went as far as you could there, then joined Rogue Squadron and strung victories together there. Then you find out that you're really from a Jedi family, and you end up here, training to be what you've been destined to be since birth. You've always had a course plotted out for you. I started to protest what she was saying, but faint echoes of it rang true. They meant little to me, however, because of the chill cutting at my spine, as I thought about what little I knew of her. You thought you were on a hero path, doing what you had to do to make a difference in the Empire. Then, bang, it's all gone. Everything you worked for vanishes, cutting you off, leaving you adrift.
Right. And everything has been swapped black for white in the galaxy. I came here for instruction, and to learn where I fit into the new order of things.
And the ship was your escape valve. If you didn't like things, you could take off. I felt a hint of resentment from her.
I'm not one to quit a project I start. I just don't like losing my freedom like this.
Allow yourself the chance to see if what Master Skywalker offers really is what you need.
It's as good a plan as any.
She turned and started walking back to the Great Temple.
I understand you get up early and run in the morning.
With the dawn.
Mind company?